On this episode of Teched Out by Full Stack Academy, Corey and I discuss performance. Just how fast can you check if you put those cookies on your shopping list? And how is it possible that a list of a million items doesn't take that much longer than a list of 10 items?
So we just talked about algorithms. And one thing I think that we could talk a little bit more about is like, how do we, okay, so we talked about like making breakfast, but like, how do we measure the best way to make breakfast? Or like, what is the best algorithm, right?
Like, there's no wrong way to make breakfast,
right?
But there might be good ways. Actually, you know what? I take that back. There are probably wrong ways to make breakfast.
Definitely wrong ways to make breakfast. But in terms of an algorithm, we talked about it always producing a reliable, complete answer. Mm-hmm. So if we imagine an algorithm as taking some input, being a black box, and then producing some output, anything that takes that input and produces that output seems to be a good algorithm. But in fact, they're not all very good. There are better ways to do things and there are worse ways to do things. But if they're all producing the same output and taking the same input, how could we know which is better? Well, one really reliable metric is time. Time, right? Like if one algorithm can perform the same task in half the amount of time than another one, is that better? What if it's 1/100th the amount of time, 1/1000th the amount of time? Right? Mm-hmm. What if it's even more fractional than that, right?
So I might have multiple breakfast algorithms that will all get me the same result. I'll get the same thing on my plate and in my mug, right? But one of them might take 20 minutes and another one might take 2 hours. Maybe I've got a breakfast algorithm that's like, make all the eggs, make our eggs Benedict. Then once that's done, start making some coffee. And then once that's done, start doing some other, and that's really inefficient.
That's right.
Because I'm just standing there waiting most of the time.
Yeah. So I think let's talk about, let's pretend you are going to the supermarket and you've made a grocery list. Okay. And your girlfriend goes, did you put apples on the list? Did you put apples on the list, Jeff?
Yeah, because I don't know.
You don't know. You don't remember, but you have a list, which is really cool. So what can you do? What is the algorithm you could take to solve this problem? Given a list and you, how can you figure out now if you've put apples on the list already?
I guess I could just look at each item in the list one by one and say, is this item apples?
Right. Yeah. Is this item apples? And if it's not, at the very end, we could just add that item to the list maybe.
Gotcha.
Right? Yeah. That's one way you could do this. But what we care about right now is, can we check to see if our list contains some value? Does our list contain apples in this case, right? And the only really efficient way that we could do this, that when we think about it, is by reading through the entire list, right? Which is, if these elements on this list, these items on this list are just written, you know, you got bananas and then you got cereal and you have whatever else, like clearly we're in breakfast mode right now. The way that we can think about doing this is you have to go one by one on that list and check if apples is there. But what if hypothetically you had a million items on this list?
It would take forever.
It would take forever, right? So going through this grocery list that your girlfriend asks you if you're going to get apples, it's like, I don't even know where to start. I have a million things on this list.
I would say, I don't think you're getting apples. I'm sorry, I've got a million things to buy. If apples aren't on that list, then...
Exactly. So what we could say, though, about this relationship here is that, like, if we were to just write items on the list in no particular order at all, the only way that we could actually check to see if something is on our list is if we go through each item on our list. Therefore, the amount of time that it would take us to figure out if something was on our list is directly proportional to the amount of items that are on our list, right? So if we have 100 items on our list, if it takes us 1 second to read an item, having 100 items will take us 100 seconds.
That sounds like it checks out. I think that math is
pretty
sound.
Pretty sound. Everybody with me? Podcast people, please respond. Great.
We got the thumbs up.
We got the thumbs up.
Let's go.
Thanks, guys. So let's consider a better approach. What if instead, when you were making the list, you had gone and alphabetized it? Yeah.
That doesn't sound too hard, I guess. Apples, I would just put at the beginning of the list.
Maybe, yeah. Unless you had like...
Alphabet soup.
Alphabet soup. Yeah. So, yeah.
Aardvark meat.
Aardvark meat. Jeff's an avid aardvark meat eater.
It's so tender.
But he's a vegetarian otherwise. But if you had alphabetized this list, this sort of changes the way that we go about things, right? Now let's maybe make the example not apples, because that would be at the beginning of the alphabet, but maybe cookies, right? So now if we have a list of, let's say, 10 items, before we would have had to traverse the entire list because we didn't know where cookies could be, right? But one thing we could consider is, remember, cookies doesn't necessarily have to be like the third item on the list because it's letter C. We could have 7 items that start with the letter A, right? And so what we could do is we could start now in the middle of our list. Instead of saying, let's start at the beginning and work our way through, if everything's in alphabetical order and we go, oh, okay, we start in the middle of the list, we find out that it's like
lentils,
right? Great. So lentils are in the middle of our list, and we go and check and we're trying to see if cookies are on our list, and we can say, you know what? Cookies is before lentils in the alphabet, and therefore I must have placed this thing higher on the list. So therefore, we already know in a single comparison that the entire second half of our list could not contain cookies. That's pretty crazy, right? Whereas like in the first situation, we, by reading through a particular item and seeing that it wasn't apples or that it isn't cookies, we couldn't tell anything about what the rest of the list was about. But in this case, just by starting in the middle, we've immediately eliminated half of our pool of potential cookie placement things on the list, right?
So everything after lentils in this list just couldn't possibly be cookies, because lentils is after, L is after C in the alphabet, so we can eliminate that whole section.
Right. Right. So on each move, on each comparison that you did to check to see if you had cookies, you would eliminate half of the pool. Now at 10 elements, this might not sound that big of a deal because, well, that's only 5 elements gone.
Right.
But if you had a list of 1 million elements before, you had to traverse through 1 million elements to see if cookies was on the list. Now, if we just start in the middle of our 1 million element list, 1 million item list of things that we need to buy, and we find out that the middle item on that million item list is lentils, right? We can now say that 500,001 through the end, through number 1 million, essentially do not have cookies, could not contain cookies. We've eliminated half of our pool on a single comparison. And that's really, really, really cool. And we can continue this process. Now we go and pick the midpoint there. We pick, you know, list item number 250,000, right? Or list item number 3 in the case of just having 10 items. Right. We go, is cookies here? We find out that item number 4 is duck. Or something like that. And you're like, oh, okay, great. So now let's go before, it must be before duck, right? So again, we've eliminated half of our pool. So notice that every comparison we do, until of course we cannot either find cookies because there is no alphabet area between CA and CQ or something like that where cookies could have been, right. I don't know. Or we've exhausted all of the possible movements that we could do.
Right. Like if we look at catfish, and then the one right after that is
Dogfish head beer.
Dogfish head beer. There you go. Yep. Cookies would be between those two things. So if there's nothing between those two things, then we haven't put cookies on the list.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this is really cool because on every single move that we do, as long as our list of items is sorted, we can always do this, right? It's like looking something up in the dictionary. Like if you were looking for the word feather and you opened up to G, you know you went too far, right? Mm-hmm. It's sort of the same idea here. And so by eliminating half of our pool on every single combination, it turns out that adding more items to our list doesn't add a proportional amount of time. Right? Like if we were going through each item one by one, then every item we add takes up some amount of time. But because we're eliminating half of the possible combinations on a single comparison, we're not adding a proportional amount of time for every item we add. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of looking for something in a book, like a dictionary or a phone book or something that's alphabetized. Right. When you're looking up a word in the dictionary, like let's say we wanted up to look up the word algorithm. Well, we could just start in the middle. I mean, we know that it's toward the beginning of the book, I guess, right? So we'd probably open up to a page earlier in the book. But even if we opened up to something in the middle, we'd see a word that starts with some letter in the middle of the alphabet, and we could kind of open up another page that's closer to the beginning, right? And it doesn't actually take us too many page flips, usually, to get to the word that we're looking for, or the person in the phone book that we're looking for, even if we have no idea which section of the book it is at the beginning. We just open up to a random page, and that gives us a pretty good signpost to follow.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great example. So I think this actually gets into one way that we can measure performance, right? Which is like, how much time does an algorithm take? And when we think about this, we don't think about our list of, you know, 10 items to go to the grocery. We think about a million items or a billion items. How do we start to handle things like that? Remember, we talked about the traveling salesman problem, and it couldn't handle more than 10 or 15 items. But if reading through a list only took a nanosecond for a computer to do, you know, one element at a time versus, you know, breaking it up into, you know, where you eliminate half of the amount that you need to take care of each time, you might start to see a major, major, major difference. So we get into this idea of magnitude. What is the difference in the amount of magnitude of time that an algorithm will take when we compare them to each other? And these are some of the things that we start to think about.
So magnitude, you're talking about big changes in size.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, cutting our phone book in half, cutting our list in half on each move, on each comparison that we do, is more effective than literally, like, having to, like, if we had to, for some reason, do that two times.
Right.
Versus having to read through our entire list once. I would bet you that doing this divide method, this it's also known as divide and conquer, this divide and conquer method is probably more efficient to be done twice. You could double, you know, like, you know, if you were, like, writing this algorithm for Santa, so he's got to check his list and then he's got to check it twice or something, right? I think it would be more efficient if he checks it with a divide and conquer algorithm. And somebody should probably let Santa know. Because if he's reading through it one at a time, he's taking up way more time than he needs. And that's not a good use of Santa's time.
Yeah, I bet one of Santa's elves has pointed this out to him. You know,
yeah.
You should really be doing a binary search on this alphabetized list, Santa. You're wasting so much time.
Yeah, and if you really...
Billions of kids.
Yeah. And so you're right, your N is very large. You have to check the list not only for, like, you know, a single list that you're checking, but you have to check the list for every single child twice. Like, wow, that is a lot of things to do. And to be efficient enough to get that done, you need to think about what is the best way that I can approach this.
So there are clearly better ways of doing things than others. We can compare two algorithms and get a sense of kind of how long it might take and see why one is more efficient than the other. We can see why scanning through a list one item at a time is not going to be as efficient as doing this divide and conquer binary search thing where we start in the middle and cut our half our input size each time. But how do we really compare these two things without getting into the specifics? Is there any kind of labeling or category system that we can drop these things into and say, you know, all of these kinds of algorithms are better than all these other ones or their patterns?
So this is sort of what I was getting into with magnitude. And the term that's given here is called big O, big O notation, where O is sort of a order of magnitude of a function, which is like how does this algorithm scale with size? How does this algorithm scale with size? For example, if let's go back to our shopping list for getting some groceries, okay? And I told you to write some kind of algorithm, Jeff, that always tells me the first item on that list.
That always tells you the first item on the list. Okay, well, I guess the steps would be take out your list, look at the first item on it, and return that item.
Read that item aloud,
right?
Read that item.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. Now, if the list was 1 million elements, 1 million items, mm-hmm. versus if the list was 5 items, does it make a difference?
If I'm just finding the first one?
Just finding the first one.
I guess not. No, it's takes just as long to read the first item on the list of five items as it does with 5 billion items on it.
Right. And so we could say that this algorithm's a big O notation, it's order of magnitude, which is a representation of how performant this algorithm is in relation to its input. It tells us nothing about exactly how much time something takes. I don't know how long it's going to take you to get that paper out of your pocket and read that thing aloud. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that it will take you the same amount of time, regardless of the number of items on your list.
Right, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we can't say it's always going to take 3 seconds to read the first item on a list. Because it might take me 3 seconds, it might take you 2.5 seconds, it might take one of our computers, you know, half a millisecond to do that, and it might take a computer from 40 years ago 5 milliseconds
yep.
to do that. But we can say for each of these machines or people executing this task, it's going to take about the same amount of time
Correct.
Each time they do it.
Correct.
Right? It's not like it's going to be 3 seconds for me one time and 500 seconds the next time.
Right. So when we think of this class of magnitude, we think of constant. No matter, we imagine the machine that's doing it to be the same, the person who's executing it to be the same. And if we take all of that into account, this task should take a constant or a routine amount of time, regardless of the size of the input. No matter how big our list is, it takes the same amount of time to read the first item on that list.
Right. The input size doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter.
The
size of our list.
Doesn't matter, Jeff.
Doesn't factor in at all.
Right. Could not matter less.
Cool.
Yeah. But now, there are situations, of course, where processes do matter and do depend on the input size. For example, if I asked you to, again, find an item on your shopping list.
Yeah, if I'm looking for cookies on that list, then
right.
it does matter how many items are on it, right?
Exactly.
If there are 5 items, it's not going to take me that long. But if there are 1 million items, especially if those items aren't alphabetized, I might be looking at that list for quite a while.
Right.
And if it were 5 million items, it could take 5 times as long.
Right. Exactly. And so that's the idea, though, is that every item we'd add, if our list is not alphabetized and we have to go through each item, and that is the only possible way of validating whether an item belongs or is in our list, well, then our only option is to traverse one item at a time. Looking, is this thing cookies? Is this thing cookies? Is this thing cookies? I want some cookies, right? And so you can continue to routinely do this, and as our list grows in size, so does the amount of time to complete this algorithm, right? You will take maybe 1 second to look at one item, but it might take you 5 seconds to look at 5 items or 100 seconds to look at 100 items. We call this linear in terms of its order of magnitude.
Like line.
Right.
What's the line in this case?
Oh, God. So basically the idea here is that it's directly proportional, mm-hmm. right? Is that like, as our X, as our N, as our input grows, the amount of time it takes per unit input stays the same. So if one item takes us 1 second to read, 2 items will take us 2 seconds to read.
Gotcha. So yeah. I'm imagining some sort of straight line. It's hard not to think about a graph here, I guess, like getting back to middle school math, plotting out on graph paper. I don't know. Do kids still do that in middle school now? Do you think they're drawing with pencils on graph paper still?
I don't know.
In most schools? Or are they using iPads or smart boards? Or?
I know a lot of schools give out Macs now and like give out laptops to students. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess regardless of what you're drawing this thing on, you know, if you've got two axes, I guess, without getting too much in the weeds here, right? You've got the numbers 1 to 10 plotted horizontally. You've got the numbers 1 to 10 plotted vertically. You said
where the horizontal numbers are going to represent the amount of items.
Right. The number of things on our list.
Right.
That's the horizontal axis, the x-axis here.
Right.
Right. And if one item takes us 1 second, we could say at x is 1, y will just make the number of seconds it takes, right? So we would plot the point 1, 1.
Right, exactly.
And if x is 5, we've got 5 items on our list, then that might take us 5 seconds.
Correct.
To plot the point 5, 5. And you can draw a straight line between those two things, and it would continue to predict how long it might take with other items, right? 20 items on the list, it's going to take us 20 seconds, roughly.
Right.
And maybe we could adjust something here. Maybe I'm a little bit slower of a reader than you are, so you it takes are, Jeff. Me twice as long, right? But even then, we've got the points, X is 1, Y is 2, and X is 5, Y is 10, X is 100, Y is 200, right? Like, we've got a scale there, right? You can always multiply the X by 2 to get the Y. It's just a straight line plotted Correct. On this graph.
Right. But either way, once we start comparing how long does it take to get the first element of a list versus find an element in a list, those orders of magnitude, the big O, right, are two completely different ball games, right? If we have a million elements in a list, right, regardless of whether it takes you twice as long as me, either of those, either me reading out each element or you reading out each element, is obviously in a different ballpark than reading the first element of a list.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
And so that's what the order of magnitude is here.
Right.
Right? Is like, there is literally, if we go toward a million elements on a list, do we start to see a difference? A billion elements on a list, do we see a major difference? The difference between 1 billion seconds and 2 billion seconds is nowhere near as bad as, like, you know, 1 billion seconds squared or something like
right.
that. Right.
So if you've got someone who's an excruciatingly slow reader, just, you know, talks very, very slowly, reads the word cookies like cookies.
Thanks for taking a couple seconds to do that, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. So you can imagine someone like that reading the first item on a list, and they're racing somebody who's got a million items on their list, but it's really, really fast. The person who's only going to read one item is still going to beat the person who's really, really fast if you give that fast person enough items to read.
Exactly. Right? And that's a really good way of looking at it. And let's just quickly dive into the example where, like, our list was sorted, right? Mm-hmm. Where we've been very good, we've been very diligent at alphabetizing our list.
Right.
This is where math gets a little bit more difficult to think about. But I like to think of it like this. Imagine we want to buy t-shirts for our podcast. We're really excited. We want to get decked out in teched out gear. And you like
been
that.
I've waiting to say that for so long. I can see it in your face.
Look, I
decked
don't.
Decked out in my teched out.
Decked out and teched out. Yeah, we should. So let's say we want to make some shirts, right? And so we make some shirts, and I go to buy two shirts for us, right? One shirt probably cost me like $20, the custom make or something like that, right? Two shirts doesn't cost me $20 a shirt. It costs me $18 a shirt. So it still costs me more money to buy more shirts, but the amount of money per unit shirt goes down, right? This is what I like to think of as logarithmic algorithms. Yes, adding more t-shirts will cost more money, but the price per unit shirt or the time per unit item goes down.
I see. And this is, I think, how that would apply to this alphabetized list.
Exactly.
Right? You add more items to this alphabetized list, it's actually not going to take you that much longer to find it because you can do this divide and conquer strategy. If we doubled the size of the lists, you actually only have to cut it in half one more time, right? So it only takes you as much time as maybe the person who has to read the one item at the very beginning of the list. Just to kind of cut things in half, right?
Exactly. So, and that's actually the rule of two here, which is like, for every time we double the size of our list, we also double the amount of time that it will take us to accomplish it, right? And a list of, four elements will approximately take us half the amount of time than a list of eight elements.
You're talking about in the scenario of an unsorted, unalphabetized list that you're just scanning down. Right.
Well, on each iteration, we will actually cut our list size in half.
Oh, on the alphabetized.
Yes, in the alphabetized list.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
So, so that's sort of the last scenario here is talking about this alphabetized version in which on each iteration, we cut our pool in half. And because we cut our pool in half or our input size in half on each iteration, every element we add doesn't take us that much more time to approach. We call these logarithmic algorithms.
It's a big scary word.
That's a very, very scary word.
But it's a pretty simple concept, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Right? You just come up with a way of making it so that doubling the size of your input, doubling the number of items on your lists, only takes you one extra step. It's
yep.
like buying shirts in bulk, right? You end up paying more, but not twice as much more
right.
when you order twice as many shirts. And I'm thinking of this scenario again where someone who's very slow at reading items on this list.
Please don't do the cookies thing again. Please don't do the cookies thing again.
All right, I'll spare you. Okay. So, someone who's very slow at reading items yeah. on this list, who has an alphabetized list and uses this strategy of binary searching or dividing and conquering, you could give a big enough list to two people, and that person who's slow but using the right strategy is always going to beat the fast reader who has to look through all these unsorted items.
Right. Yeah. And so that's the idea here. At maybe if we had only two items on our list, we wouldn't really see a difference between where we start. We can't even really start in the middle if we have two items.
Right. Right.
Say three items, whatever. But we're not going to really see a difference there. We're sure. going to start to see a difference once we hit 100 items, 200 items, 1,000 items, 1,000,000 items.
At 1 billion items.
1 billion. Yes. Thanks for the Austin Powers throwback.
You're
right
welcome.
There. You Dr. Evil person. All right. Well, I think that's enough. We talked about Big O. We talked about performance, the order of magnitude of functions, and we talked about cookies in a really, really slow said.
Every time you say the word magnitude, I just want to go, pop, pop.
What? What?
Magnitude? Community?
Oh.
Pop, pop. You want to watch Community and eat cookies.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go do that. We're going to watch some Community and eat some cookies. We'll talk to you all later.